So, you want to be a contractor. Ever wonder what it takes to become a contractor? The journey they go on to get where they are now, or the crazy things they see and hear on the job site. Well, you're in the right spot. Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor, the podcast. Join your host, Mike Fisher, as he talks to owners of construction companies from all over about how they got started, how they run their business, and some of the craziest stories they've experienced on their job sites. And now, your host, Mike Fisher.
Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor. This is episode number 19, and my name is Mike Fisher. With me today, Jeff Mudd, president at Vestra Repair. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing awesome.
Perfect. So before we get started, let's kind of...
Really happy to be here, Mike.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So let's learn a little bit about you. How did you get into this industry, and what led you to where you are today?
Well, I've pretty much right out of high school worked single family residence, handyman work, worked for some different people doing remodel stuff, nothing too elaborate. But that set the stage that at 30, after a couple tries of my own little businesses, had a first kid on the way, decided to get a real job, went to a termite company and learned a lot there, got licensed as a trader, then a termite inspector, and really had a nice 10-year run working my way up as a termite inspector at a couple different termite companies here in San Diego. And everybody remembers 9/11. Well, that really had an effect on me and my work. And so made the choice to start my own construction company. So it's been about 20 years now since I started after 9/11. And Best Right Repair Company is really just started off doing the same thing that most termite companies do when they do an inspection for an escrow. We started off doing all the wood repairs that the termite companies would call out on an inspection. So nothing glamorous. We just did a lot of it.
Yeah, I just moved into this house in September. So just had that done pretty recently. So very familiar with that process and how it works. Kind of going back to obviously the beginning, where coming out of high school, because this is the part that kind of intrigues me, right, the most, especially with kind of the way our labor market is right now. Was there something that pushed you to the trades? Was it a last resort kind of thing? Was there what was that thought process like and the decision making process like in moving into the trades out of high school?
Really good question, Mike. I don't think it was anything that detailed. It was more, I was kind of a troublemaker, and it was easy to get into and allowed me to pay a few bills and have some fun in my early 20s there. But the whole time I was kept working, though, kept learning. Did a couple of rounds at a local community college on business management, so I did have my own sole proprietorships a couple times. And fancied college. Did not go to college out of high school at all, but the ability to get a job in the trades was easy, and it paid okay. So.
Yeah, I think that's the important part to kind of touch on, right? Because college isn't for everybody. That's pretty clear. And the unfortunate part is that the kind of kids in high school are made to believe that's their only option. But as you mentioned, like it paid well, right? It allowed you to keep working and pay bills. And you were able to, as you said, kind of go to community college as well to kind of specialize or enhance some of those things that you were learning out in the field while you were paying bills, right? It wasn't a 4 years of no making money and then coming out with, you know, $100,000 in debt. You were
making
money from the beginning and money from the beginning and being able to enhance.
Yeah, there's a ROP, I forget what it stands for, but I went to that a couple times, took classes in carpentry, property maintenance, some areas like that. Done a lot of property maintenance for some different property management companies in my 20s. So I've always been a proponent of education. You can get an education in multiple ways now without having to go to college and get in debt.
Yeah, for sure. And one of them is just hands-on, right? Out in the field.
Well, there's obviously the on-the-job training. I mean, as an employer, I've had a lot of guys work. Still some guys been there from the 20 years that we've had history. There's still some guys there that long. But the ability to learn outside of work, I think, is something you should always have, even if it's not for your career, but for your self improvement.
Right. So, kind of going back to moving into the termite company, where I assume you just wanted a little bit more stability. You know, an established company and some guaranteed work. What was there something specific about the termite work that you were interested in, or was it just simply an opportunity that presented itself at that time?
Well, you're definitely right about this. If, starting to raise a family was definitely there. Economy was just 1990, a little bit of a downturn, not much, but it was still there. But really, for me, the previous work that I was doing, one of our lead sources was a termite inspector from a small company in Spring Valley. So I'd already been familiar with doing the termite repairs and the section out the fascia boards and things like that. Definitely, was, you know, all through my 20s, I definitely worked with my hands. I earned those aches and pains I've got right now.
So you obviously did a lot of bit of work, or, you know, quite a bit of work through the termite company. And then, you know, what was the, obviously, you know, kind of, you mentioned 9/11 a little bit. Was there something specific that pushed you to, hey, I want to do this on my own? Was it ideas that you had? Was it the way that the business wanted to be operated? Or was it simply just the opportunity for the work and being able to do it on your own?
I think it's a, several factors. One, as a termite inspector, I was very privileged and lucky that I could work my own hours. So most of it was during the day when I'd meet realtors or homeowners and do an inspection and go through a presentation process. But if I needed to get off at 2 o'clock and pick my son up from school and take him to baseball practice, I had that ability and I could go back to work, you know, 4 hours later when we were all done having our baseball practice and games and stuff. So, or if I had a 3-day weekend with my other son to do Boy Scouts. So I was very privileged to do all that. And I liked that idea when I was thinking about, you know, 9/11, what's my life like? But I also learned during that process that I did not want to get into the corporate life. I really liked the freedom of working for myself. I'd already had a couple of small businesses, that, you know, good learning process, good lessons learned, but, didn't really turn into a full career at the time. I had, some property, had some money saved. So I just felt like it was time. Always had that entrepreneurial spirit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, for sure. And obviously, you know, kind of shows in the fact that you've had some other endeavors as well. Going into those first couple of years or even just kind of getting started, I know, obviously, I've had a lot of conversations with guys that have kind of followed that same path. And one of the things, you know, you've got this mindset that, you know, hey, I'm good at what I do. I know how to do it. Maybe I've got my own ideas on how to maybe do it a little bit better. But kind of stepping out, you don't realize that, you know, generating business and getting people to trust you to do work and do some of those things is a really big hurdle, especially when you're just getting started. So kind of how did you get through that process? What were those first, you know, year or so like as far as, you know, getting work and getting people to trust you that, you know, to be able to bring you on and do some of that work?
Well, that's a really good point of getting the people to trust me. I think I had a great reputation as a termite inspector in the San Diego County here. But I just thought, okay, I'm going to start my own business. And all those those state agents, big hitters, are going to follow me over to my company, and you know, things are going to be gravy.
Seems easy,
well,
right?
Well, one of the things going back to them was like, well, we like you a lot, Jeff, but you're on your own, and we like the stability, having a large company behind you to back you up if there's a problem, you know, to make it through the escrow. So it took a while to, years to rebuild a new brand or new trust with a lot of the agents that I worked with. So, yeah.
Was there something specific that kind of catapulted that, or was it just consistent grinding and improving yourself?
Well, we mentioned earlier about education. So one of the things that I really hadn't had to do before is my own, being a termite inspector working for another company, was marketing.
Yeah.
So when you have your own company, you know, I did spend a lot of time at some of the chambers, learning about SEO and pay-per-click. Didn't know anything about that. Did networking groups in the evening. So, you know, it's one of those, you get up early, I've made it to the lumber store, got a little lumber, meet the crews. We work all day, come back. I got a, you know, a little bit of a phone calls or two, go to a networking group, and then come home and do some, QuickBooks accounting, you know, so they made for some long days. And, I feel like I've, had to do a lot of new education during that process. So, getting out of your shell.
Yeah.
And the networking thing was definitely one of them.
And that's a good point, right? But not being afraid and to put yourself out there and put your pride in your pocket a little bit and understanding that there's people that have quite a bit of knowledge that can help you, but you just gotta, like you said, put yourself out there and get in front of those people and not be afraid to talk to them and learn a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So learning how to network, learning how to do marketing, pay-per-click, SEO, all that stuff. I would turn into a blog writer for quite a few years. So the website has a huge backlog of blogs on there. So
it's all about content, right? And that's what's fun about it. And it sounds like you were a little bit ahead of that curve, right? But I think in the construction space or in the contractor space in general, you know, SEO and marketing and you know, social media and blogs and all those things are kind of foreign to a lot of contractors and people in this construction space. So I my hat's off to you for being kind of ahead of that and you know, being one of I would say the early adopters of that process, especially in our space.
Absolutely. It's one of those, the newspaper and the yellow pages were definitely a dying breed. So what's next? I mean, you can go into the marketing aspect of HomeAdvisor and Angie's List and Yelp and all that kind of stuff. That's expensive. Expensive way. You're expensive in your time to run around and find out you're the man out there.
Well, at that point, you really just, you're low bidding everything, right? I mean, that's
absolutely. And that's another thing. I mean, if you're the name of your contract, you want to be a contractor. You know, there's always going to be somebody that will do the work cheaper than you. So you have to understand your margins, you know, your cost of materials, how much is labor going to cost. So you have to make a living to do it. It's one thing to, you know, take a job for a very specific reason and discount it. But to just go out there and be the cheapest guy and be busy, busy, that's not going to help you be successful.
Yeah, might look good on the top line, but when all things are said and done, and you get to that bottom line, is where a shock factor comes in for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah, make sure you understand that
the top line rather than
understand that early on in your contracting career is crucial.
Yeah, for sure. What where do you find your relationships be most valuable? I mean, personally, again, in my experience, this is just back in September. My agent who represented me as a buyer knew somebody, but in our to do the inspection, but and called them up and set it all up. But in the sale of our old home, it was the escrow company that set it up. So where do you find your relationships are most valuable in that process, or where are you spending your most time kind of building your network?
What I found was having that relationship with the real estate agent was really the 99% of the time. Every once in a while, we get a broker, or seems like there was a big stretch of time that I, as a termite inspector, I did a lot of HUD inspections, and that was an escrow officer reaching out for those. But now, you've got to have a solid relationship with a real estate agent to be able to get those leads for doing that particular type of escrow transaction work. And that's a really tough road right now. The number of homes for sale in San Diego County compared to what they were, 5 years ago, it's mind-boggling different.
Well, it's got to be a competitive space right now. I feel like I personally know 17 different friends who are real estate agents, just because it's such a good business to be in right now, right? Very profitable. But from a marketing standpoint, how much are you spending, whether it's dollars, time, whatever, in cultivating and maintaining and generating new relationships in that real estate agent space versus, the website or the social media or the digital stuff?
Personally, I like LinkedIn a lot. Most realtors are going to be on there. It's a little more professional on Facebook. I've kind of shied away from Facebook, if not dropped it. Definitely not, through COVID, going into the offices just died. But that's what built me when I was a brand new termite inspector. Yeah, going into the office and
just not
going
doors.
In the real estate office and, hey, I got some information. Can I leave it in the wherever they had their boxes, file cabinets, little cubby holes in the back of the office? But that all changed. So, I think right now for us, as Best Rate Repair, we love real estate transactions. We do very well at them, but we don't spend a lot of time marketing for that. I'm more focusing on property management companies. So we do larger projects now. Yeah.
So you guys have gotten away from the single family home stuff into the larger multifamily condos,
The marketing aspect of it. Yes. The multifamily. So if you have a condo complex and everybody's got a balcony in the back and they all have the same problem, that's a lot more efficient, and property managers also recognize and have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure everybody's licensed and, insured, doing it correctly. So it's a lot longer sales process to do it right. And I think we can do a better product for the customer that way. And everybody downline, from the property managers to the owners to the sometimes just the renters that are in the units, I'll get a better product that way too. They're not chasing low bid. That's, going to be a problem in the future. Yeah.
Questionable. Yeah, for sure. So what is your labor force look like now and kind of what was that process like in building that up? It sounds like you've probably got quite a few guys.
We've grown quite a bit. Actually I found that I can manage a sales force of about two, maybe three people, and the 18 to 22 people that they took to service all the jobs that they were selling on single families. Over the last 3 years, we've probably doubled that though. So a lot of that is COVID. People stayed at home. We've definitely grew a lot during that time. But we're already on the upswing. So when we get into a multifamily project, one of the things that makes it a good project is we get in and get out. We don't stretch it out because we only got two guys that can work there for 6 months. Yeah. You put There's, you know, six guys that are all qualified, ready to go. And then you give them the support staff with a guy with a big truck and a dump trailer. So get that debris out of there as quickly as possible. Keep the job site looking clean. You have another guy that all his job is to do is run materials to the job site. So you got to learn how to systematically make that go a lot faster. Yeah.
Yeah, be efficient. Yeah, for sure. And I have to imagine with 30 to 40 guys, it sounds like you got out in the field working for you. You've got to be an attractive place to work, right? Because when you've got just a couple guys in the field, or, you know, 5, 8, 10, whatever it is, there's not a lot of, you bring somebody on new and they say, well, you've only got six other guys. Like, what, how much room for growth is there? But it sounds like with the way you have it set up, you know, you're probably bringing guys in at a lower level, kind of train them and let them watch. And because you've got so many different guys, you've probably got different levels of supervisor where these guys can kind of move up and see a growth path. Is that absolutely, are you seeing that?
Absolutely, Mike. So I've always gone back to the trying to have the two-man team. So we have a experienced guy, older, and his job is to, one, supervise the job to make sure it's done right, but it's also to not just show the other guy how to do it, but the why and the how to. And this, you know, this is where, so talk why you're doing it, explain it to him so he can learn not just how to hammer the nail straight, but how to, why it needs to be straight or why it needs to be at an angle in this particular case. We've done a lot of decks, so that's one of the things that we're still doing quite a bit of for single family residents, the homeowners there. So that two-man team has always been something we liked. We still use that a lot. But, yeah, now we have field supervisors. We have coordinators in the office that work directly with the homeowners or the property managers to work out the scheduling. More people in the office. We've created sales positions. So a lot of guys, you know, they start to get in the late 30s, 40 mark is kicking around, thinking, okay, the body wearing out, what do I do next? Oh, the sales guys, they don't work very hard.
Not physically, at least, right? Yeah.
Well, from their perspective, they don't see what they do all day long. Right, they see them, right. They see them show up a job site. They see the numbers they kick out. So they have the idea that they want to be a salesperson. But it's a very unique and challenging field all in its own.
Yeah, sure.
My hat's off to the sales staff that we definitely have had over the years. So we've had a few guys that get in, they try it, and it's like, now I see. Yeah, thanks for the rest up, and the, you know, I'll go back swinging the hammer.
Yeah, it's funny.
And we have had quite a few guys over the years that gone to the point where, you know, they think they can do it on their own. They've been respectful, given plenty of notice, and I've actually signed for 3 different employees to get their own contractor's license in the last 20 years.
I love that mentality, right? Because that's all that's doing is helping the industry, right? I mean, you could be spiteful about it and not help them and not do it, you know, and think, you know, take the selfish mentality of, hey, you're leaving me, you know, what are you doing to me, and all that. But there's something to be said about kind of building a legacy and leaving a legacy behind in the industry, right? Kind of, I go back to like NFL coaching, right? I don't know if you watch football, but every once in a while in a football game, they'll show a young coach and they'll kind of show where he came from in the coaching tree, right? Where you've got the head coach who had these 2 assistants who have, you know what I mean? You got this huge tree. And you're kind of doing the same thing, right? I mean, you're building these guys up. And again, as long as they do it, like you said, respectfully and give the notice and do all those other things, I mean, it's, if you look at it from the right way, it's got to be a feel good moment knowing that you've done right by this person and trained to the ability where they can go out on their own and do the work. Cause I mean, there's enough work out there for everybody, right? I mean, you don't need to be.
There absolutely is. I mean, if you're, you know, look at the definition between a leader and a boss, you know, a boss definitely would have taken that standpoint. Uh-oh, he's going to take my customers. He's going to take my employees. A leader, you know, it's going to help him groom. Did you think about this? You think about that? You know, I've had those conversations with them, and they appreciate that. And then your other employees, you know, they see that gift down, however you want to call it, to people that are moving on. And, you know, I think it means a lot to them also. I know when I first started out, I had to ask help from somebody to get my license. You know, he put his signature on the paper to certify my experience. So I think that's just the difference between being a boss and a leader, you know?
Yeah. And like I said, leaving that legacy behind is something that that's got to feel good at some point as well. Going back to kind of what you mentioned on the training aspect, I love what you said about, you know, teaching somebody to do something, but also explaining the why, right? Because that's I think it's a very important thing to kind of focus on, because you can, and actually I just talked about this with a guy a couple episodes ago, the one that I just released today. He said that he was on a job and they had hired a bunch of, they needed all these electricians because it was a, you know, 500 hotel room kind of thing. And they needed him to wire this certain thing. And they hired five or six guys and taught them how to wire this one thing, right? Here's step A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, how you do this thing. And then they called them electricians and say, well, we've got all these electricians. But at the end of the day, all they really knew how to do was those seven steps to do that one job, right? They couldn't do anything else. But had somebody taken the time to explain, this is why you do step A and this is why you do step B, not to say that they would have been journeyman electrician by any means, but they may have been able to troubleshoot or answer other questions that come up during that process because they knew the why on some of those things, right? So like you said, it's not necessarily, you know, you hammer the nail straight in this situation. It's why you do it. And maybe that why, you know, is able to help them figure something else out or troubleshoot something else, you know, later on in their career or in that job specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. If you take something as simple as a code for a cantilever building a deck and you tell him it can't be any more than 18 inches hanging past the beam, he'll do that the rest of his life without taking into a fact that, you know, you can change that with the joist being on center, the size of the joist. You know, there's different factors that can change that. So teaching people why, I think, goes a long ways because everything is not exactly the same. And that's one of the benefits of being in this construction trade, especially when you work on site with your hands. Every day is different.
Yep.
Every day can bring a new sense of accomplishment, a new sense of pride that you've done something that will make a homeowner or a new tenant happy. You can see those results.
Yeah, no, I've touched on that before, right? I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, a CFO in a company, right? And they bust their ass and they do the job, and they're definitely important to the job. But at the end of the day, their work is in numbers and in computers that aren't really visual, right? Whereas somebody in the trades can, whether it's the guy that, like you said, delivered the material all the way up to, you know, somebody like you who's actually procuring and running these jobs, at the end of the day, it's something that you can draw by and physically say, hey, I built that, right? Like, you can show family members, you can show kids, you can show whoever, like, that's my work right there. Like, it's tangible, it's visible.
Absolutely. The tangible, having your hands on it, I think it's really hits more of what we are as humans, going way back into history, what we built. I mean, the CFO that's running numbers, I'm sure when he comes up with a, let's make an adjustment here and the numbers balance out a lot more, make the company more profitable, he has that same sense of accomplishment and pride in his work.
Yeah.
But to starting off out of high school or, you know, the second chancer, you know, getting your life back together in your early 20s, whatever, you know, you can get that immediate sense of satisfaction daily.
Yeah.
Without having a huge education to do it.
I love that. That's a huge, I mean, and that's the stuff that kind of needs to be shouted from the rooftops and, you know, kind of talked about more often, right? I mean, that high, that sense of accomplishment, that sense of, you know, just being able to do something on your own, at such an early age is not to be discounted at all, right? I mean, it's very very important for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, I've worked on a few commercial jobs in my 20s, and one of them was the Mormon Temple over there off the 5.
Yeah.
And driving by that, I can still, or my kids, with the same old stories. Hey, I climbed the scaffolding all the way to the top where that little gold statue is. You know, there's not a single room in there that's, if the room is square, the ceiling is not. It has a dome or multiple levels. Nothing in there is really square. So, the wife says,
oh,
yeah. You know, so going back there, I mean, and how many people have built this country that have felt the same way driving by? I helped build that bridge. I helped do this. I helped do that.
That church is a perfect example because that, I mean, that thing's massive and literally you can't miss it driving down the freeway. I mean,
it's absolutely an icon, you know, and I wasn't special there. Yeah. It's just a laborer, you know.
You don't have to be the guy that architected it or designed it or this general superintendent, right? I mean, you could literally just be the guy that was, you know, putting in flooring or delivering drywall. But regardless, I mean, you were anyone on that job was somebody who helped build it.
Yeah, I was part of it, you know, small part, but I was part of it, you know. Same thing about the Hyatt Hotel downtown. I worked on that the first day there, and they said, where do I go? And I said, follow that guy and follow him over to some metal elevator going up the side of the building, which I never really experienced, you know. Get to the top floor, and they said, sweep it. I was like, okay. I did a perfect job till about 6 feet from the edge, and then that's where the broom mark stopped. You know, there's no walls.
Yep. So. That's awesome. So, I mean, it sounds like you guys are obviously on a pretty good trajectory. And are you at a point where you're, I don't want to say comfortable, right? Because that's a bad word to use, but you're in a good space from a size and a workflow standpoint, or is it, you know, looking to grow over the next three? What does the next 3 to 5 years look like for you guys?
That's a really good question, Mike. So, one, I recognized my, management abilities, bandwidth, you might call it, to be able to manage everything. So I do have a partner in there that he will take over the company over the next few years. So he's done a great job so far, giving me more time in my life, a little better balance. So. Yeah.
And then from there, just kind of leave it up to him as far as what he wants to do as far as growth.
We call it our dating period. We spent several months going over, you know, our values, what we want to see out of the company, how we manage, you know, what employees mean in the company. And he definitely, we definitely seen eye to eye on a lot of things. So
it's got to be nice knowing you're leaving it behind. And like I said, part of that legacy thing too, right? You know, where it's gonna continue on with the same kind of principles and philosophies.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, he even helped me come up with. I mean, it's the founder is like, you found this thing, you built it to this step, this space, Jeff. You know, that you've got a lot to be proud of, and you know, and he, and I'll make sure that people know that about you. You know, as we move That's forward. Awesome. So yeah,
maybe build your little statue or something out front, right? So something else I wanted to touch on real quick. It looks like you've got your own podcast, right? Like let's talk about that a little bit. What was the impetus behind that? What are you guys talking about there?
Yeah. So thanks for asking, Mike. So one of the frustrations that I had is most business owners, the people in the construction industry, is I can't find employees, let alone good employees that want to get into the trades. So just out of frustration, I figured, you know, this is something I can do that hopefully will have a little bit of an impact in the world that I live in. So that's what I did. We started the Trades Podcast. And we've basically been interviewing business owners like yourself about what their career paths are like, what's the opportunities. And then, you know, I've interviewed a roofer and a painter and, you know, HVAC. And so if a young adult is listening to that, then they can get a good general idea of what it's like to work for that type of trade, what the opportunities are. So.
Yeah. No, I think that's
awesome. Still see it. Having a fun time doing it. So.
Yeah, same kind of thing, right? I mean, we chatted before we kind of came on live, but for me, this is more fun, right? I work in insurance. That's kind of boring. It's pays my bills and it's what I do. But at the end of the day, all my clients are in the construction space or contractors, and I have more fun learning about what they do and talking to them and hearing their stories than I do writing their insurance, right? That's like I said, that's the boring stuff. But so for me, this is no better way to kind of build that network and kind of be able to talk to more people than I just have clients. But I think what you're doing is awesome too, right? Going back to what we talked about at the beginning, as far as being kind of on the leading edge of, you know, SEO and digital marketing and some of those other things, you know, a podcast is not something that a contractor would know, let alone think that they could be on or host, you know, 8, 10, 12 years ago. But the fact that, you know, it's being talked about now and there's people out there, and it's more than just you and me, right? I mean, even since I started this 2 years ago, I've seen them all pop up over and over. So again, it's more fun than anything. Seeing
absolutely
get involved.
Yeah, I have a great time to it. I mean, but we look at the core problem of why there's not enough construction workers in this country right now. And it didn't just happen overnight. It took a long time to get there. School funding, loss of wood shop, the parents' perception on what their kids should be to be successful, the stigma of, you know, being a plumber as opposed to being a doctor. Different things like that. There's the whole shift in the way this country thought. And I think we're turning the corner, but this is a one big ship to turn around. So it's going to take some time. And I think we all need to make our perspective on it. And I look at it this way. I'm at a point now in my career, my cycle of working that, you know what? If I do this podcast for another 5 years and, you know, I change the trajectory for a couple kids and make them productive citizens and, you know, happy family people, you know what? It's all worth it.
Yeah, 100%. That's awesome. I love that mentality. Very perfect. Well, Jeff, this has been great. I love everything you're doing, and I can't wait to kind of follow you more, not only from the podcast, but professionally and see where you guys are headed. So let's definitely keep in touch. But before I let you go, I want to give you an opportunity to kind of let everybody know where to find you, how to get a hold of you, whether it's the podcast or with Best Rate, and kind of give your shout outs.
Yeah, appreciate that, Mike. It's a pleasure being on your podcast. I really enjoyed it. My name's Jeff Mudd. I am a opponent of LinkedIn, so I'm on there. And Best Rate Repair Company, their website is BEST-RATE-REPAIR.com. Best Rate Repair. So right here in San Diego, nice company to work for, I believe. A lot of the people inside are very happy, and I think we do a great job for a lot of customers out there now. So thank you, Mike.
Perfect. And your podcast is The Trades Podcast. And I assume you're on most of the major podcast networks.
Absolutely, yes. We're slowly working on a little website to support it, get some resources on there. And we got really creative, thetradespodcast.com for the website.
I hear you. I was right there with you. Awesome. Well, Jeff, again, this has been great. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. And let's keep in touch and stay safe.
Looking forward to it, Mike. Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you had a good time, be sure to hit that subscribe button to get all the latest episodes. And if you had a really good time, leave a review to let us know what you thought. Until then, go gather some crazy stories on your job sites, and we'll see you next time on So, You Want to Be a Contractor.